SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Series 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. What a fun afternoon and early evening yesterday. Indiana Grand, and boy, there was it was a three-ring circus, depending on how you were watching. There was something going on every minute, and really it culminated with a couple of terrific performances in the two graded stakes. It was also, and got a mention right off the top, a banner day for the racetrack, setting a handle record. And you know, as Eric Hallstrom said to you yesterday, they were hopeful that they could do something like that. And frankly, when you think about the scratches that they dealt with, particularly in that General Assembly and the distaff and the turf race, the fillies and mares, you know, that field went from 13 to 7, and that takes a chunk right out of particularly the multis, obviously, and you know, the individual race. In fact, I'm just looking now that I'm glancing at it, you had three come out of the Schaefer, and one was going to come out no matter what. Actually, two potentially, because you had a couple of cross entries. So, you know, two of those were kind of automatic. They were going to come out of either, you know, the Schaefer or the Schuster. But so call it one real scratch, and you know, two out of the George, six out of the Distaff, one each out of the Derby and Oaks. And you know, that under that scenario, you know, the pick six was nice because it was eminently hittable, and the upset by Mr. Wireless, you know, not a huge upset, obviously, he was third choice at just under 4-1. It is interesting, and I'm sure, well, probably maybe tomorrow, as part of the overall, you know, conversations, doing some handicapping into the weekend. Folsom's performance at 2-5, which was, you know, I suppose if it was a little bigger, you know, bigger field, it would have been more appropriate, you know, 4-5 or even money. I mean, 2-5 was just over the top. But, you know, it's funny. You talk about being down inside. You hear, you know, horsemen, we would have preferred not to draw the inside. The inside did Folsom no favors. You could see from early on that Giroux and Folsom were kind of, you could see, tentative and awkward. And then on the backstretch, Giroux purposely got out and wanted to, you know, get more of a striking position, and really had no answer when it came time to do some real running. So hard to know how much that inside post contributed to the performance, but got beat, you know, half a dozen lengths, five, six lengths, and Mr. Wireless, Ramon Vasquez. Good for him. I'm always happy when a guy like, you know, Ramon Vasquez gets shots in races like this. And he turned in an absolute gem. And Brett Calhoun. And most notably, after we had that conversation with Doug Anderson on Tuesday. John Kerber. It's unbelievable. I mean, you saw my tweet from last night. I mean, the thing that I was struck with, that conversation with Doug and talking about, you know, the fact that Kerber and his wife, Yvetta, that they had two mayors in 2017. They had two mayors. I mean, for instance, we've got our little group. We've got two mayors. We've got now Carlisle Bell, who's in fold to Leah Frick and Volterine. Unbelievable. And she's in fold to Mosler. So he had two, he and his wife had two mayors. They breed to Shackelford and dialed in. And here it is, you know, 3.5 years later, they've got an Iowa Derby and Indiana Derby winner 6 days apart. You can't make this stuff up. It's an amazing. I mean, I termed it. I said there may be a more fascinating, amazing, remarkable breeding story somewhere among these three-year-olds this year. I don't know what it is. I mean, not going to count. I mean, obviously you got outfits, you know, the big, you know, big breeding establishments that are, you know, going to have multiple stake winners in a crop. But they're doing it with, you know, with big collections of brood mares. The Kerbers had two mares. And it's not like in 2017. It's not like in 2017 going to Shackelford and dialed in. They weren't going to Into Mischief and tap it. It's amazing. Really amazing. And I reached out to John Kerber earlier this morning. Got to talk to him. And of course, Doug, you know, it's not all, you know, this is not all, you know, candy and flowers, because of course one mayor gone and she was on the back end. And, you know, then there's the situation involving Stiletto Boy going through the sale next week, which is too bad. And I, maybe with, let's see, how much was this? This was a pretty good pot, right? 300,000. So, Kerber and, John Lipensky split that up, whacked that up, and maybe that's enough. Maybe John Kerber maybe buys out the partners on Stiletto Boy, and Doug Anderson can keep that one. But certainly Brett Calhoun, you saw Brett after the, if you were watching afterward and post-race interview. Yeah, this is only, what, the fifth? Yeah, fifth start. So there's upside yet on this gelding. You know, both horses gelded. So two Derby winners in less than a week, and they are both going to be around. So you don't have to worry. if you want to see three-year-olds become four-year-olds, these two are going to be. Mr. Wireless. And back-to-back, right? Back-to-back Indiana Derby winners for Brett Calhoun. It was a really fun afternoon. I dug in and I made a couple of, there were a couple of miscues. Soothsay, let's talk about the performance in the Oaks. Holy cow! I mean, she gets left and just kind of took a jump hop, and Bill Downs noticed it immediately, and it actually was like the first thing he said. And she got bet, and I was kind of much like Bill when we discussed it. Bill's strongest opinion was Summer in Saratoga, and he was 100% on there. I mean, that was a terrific call. Summer in Saratoga, Corey Lannery was loaded all the way around, and wins that General Assembly. But I was ambivalent as well, like Bill was, on the West Coast fillies, and they both ran well. Soothsay, I mean, just the race didn't come back fast, but the effort, you know. And by the way, if you recall, we were running out of time yesterday, and I couldn't remember, and I should have somehow really noted it on my paperwork when I was saying there's somebody that's coming in with one mount, and it was Pratt. It was Flavian Pratt that had the one mount, and when I had handicapped, you know, I made a note and then had forgotten until we got basically close to the race, and I realized, ugh, here it is. And then she got bet. She ended up second choice. Will Secret, you know, who seemed a little, you know, I reached for Lovely Ride, who, you know, broke like a shot, and Gabe Saez had no choice but to go on with it. And she looked, you know, she looked around the turn. It looked like she was traveling without much ask, but they ganged up, and she got kind of swallowed. And in the meantime, Pratt, you know, you always want to see when a horse gets left like that, and you know, whether it's something, you know, banged into the gate or leapt at the start or reared, whatever it is, broke flat-footed, you want your jock, if you bet, you want the jock to just sit for a minute, let the horse settle, get into stride, and then start to pick off position, and don't try to rush them up. I mean, I suppose in sprints, maybe, you know, and if you have kind of a one-way horse, you know, all right, I can understand that. But the way Pratt handled it, you know, to let her just get into stride and, you know, not try to make it all up in you know, in the first quarter mile. And boy, you you could see, and Bill Downs, to his credit, he picked her up too. And you could see, maybe what, 75 yards from the wire, you could see, oh my God, Soothsay is going to win this race. And she surged. I'll tell you who ran great. And that Moonswag, who Deshaun Parker, and you know, certainly on a day like this, when it comes to regional derby days, you know, ideally you want the money to, like I said, the Doug Anderson Tuesday, you want the money to stay in town a little bit. You know, you don't want the heavy heads to come in and scoop up all the dough. But Deshaun Parker, he gave Moonswag a tremendous ride for Brendan Walsh. You know, stayed within striking distance without pressing. And you could see when Lovely Ride started to back up, and then that Marion Francis, you know, who had been kind of ghosting Lovely Ride, they started to back up, and Moonswag just kept, you know, moving forward and had the lead. And it took this huge effort for the winner to deny the 40-1 shot, Moonswag. And, you know, it's funny. You go back and look. She was 20-1, Moonswag. Say, Spendthrift bred Malibu Moon, $150,000 Keeneland Yearling, and she's kept good company all year and has run respectably against top company. She started the season in the Letelier, the Silver Bullet Day, and the Rachel Alexandra, picked up checks, tried the Ashland, was beaten 10, but, you know, not terrible, and then came back in a rich allowance and ran okay. I mean, it was still six lengths and arrears of Lovely Ride. But, you know, you look down and you see a horse that ran against Malathat and Clairiere, that Charlie's Penny, who ended up sideline, Joy's Rocket. You know, started the career in New Mexico. So, yeah, the margins were neck, head, and neck for the top four. So Flavian Pratt, one ride, and he makes it count in the $200,000 Indiana Oaks. So the two features were really, you know, really lived up, and the previous action that started and included the pick six force out. You had a decent price win the first leg, and that was Big Fudge for Randy Matthews. Paid $10.40. Actually, I take that back. That was the start of the early pick four. I got to go to the seventh, actually. There we go. All stakes. That's right. Plainsman for Brad Cox and for John Ed Anthony. And that was all right. $9.60. You know, I tried, had a modest ticket, a $50 ticket. I went, what, 4x4x4x2x2x1, which, you know, then had one little backup ticket that was, you know, I was knocked out. I was knocked out in the Philly race. I didn't care for, like I said, I didn't care for Soussé. But Plainsman, $9.60 to start that pick six sequence. The pick five started Monarch's Glen. Surge, and this was my one, and I was a little frustrated yesterday, and those of you that saw the tweet when I put the link up for the, you know, when I had finished writing up the, you know, the selections and the plays, and most of the prices that I, you know, was looking forward to betting kind of fell by the wayside and were scratched, and so it left you with kind of a, you know, some logical types, but there was one horse in that sequence that I included that ended up running very well, and I got something out of it anyway, and that was Hempem Paray, who was very competitive on the paper. You looked at numbers if you're, you know, on Thoroughgraph. You looked at, you know, form and everything else. I thought that Hempem Paray was a price that you could use, and ran very well and did not. I mean, it took Monarch's Glen and Umberto Rispoli, and I ended up kind of keying a little bit with Rispoli. I kind of noticed that when I was putting, you know, picks up and writing them up, I said, yeah, there's Rispoli again. It took a very strong performance from Michael Way's Monarch's Glen, the Frankel gelding, 7 years old now, to win the Schuster. But I at 30-1, I played Hempem Paray and got a little something out of it. So that was sort of the salvage among the prices. The General Assembly we just mentioned, Summer in Saratoga, and Lannery, you know, basically wrote her like, you know, like she was odds on, and you know, Surge passed, and she was kind of reserved early and let things unfold, but you know, 3-1, you got 8.40 on Summer in Saratoga, which was good. So let's see, 9.60, 9.80. Matera, I got to slip Matera in the Mary Holman George, and 6-5, and you know, Microcap ran very well in there. That the horse we had talked about, the Grant Forster, and Microcap ran very well, but Matera came calling, and this is that 1. Whatever million Tappet filly out of Miss Macy Sue, so she gets that black type that Don Alberto undoubtedly really wants for her long term interest. This is, you know, the Albaugh Miss Macy Sue filly. So Matera wins the Holman George, pays 420. The pick six and the pick five and the pick four, it would have been exponential had Microcap actually been able to win this. Then you had 840 on Summer in Saratoga. Soothsay paid $8, and then 980. In the Derby. So the pick six pays $2,255. It 905,000 bet into the 20-cent force out. And 720, Mr. Wireless made a nice difference because Folsom was paying 500 and change in the pick five. So you ended up with 720. And really, I mean, I didn't like Soothsay. I had her as a B. But, you know, I'm sure others had her. Obviously, I mean, she was vying for favoritism for quite a while in the betting before Will's Secret ended up favored. And she ended up, Soothsay ended up 3-1 and Lovely Ride 3-10. But the favoritism was bouncing back and forth between them, those three. So some nice returns. Pick four paid $116.95. Really a fun day. And congratulations to Eric Hallstrom and his staff and the racing office, Chris Poland, and everybody that put together a really enjoyable afternoon and evening. So, all right, let's wrap up the, here we go, the Indiana Grand. I noted yesterday, late in passing, and I didn't really get the details out, but at Parks on Tuesday, that Princess Grace, I was talking about Medita because I bet her, was denied by Jersey Joe. You know, for a guy that moved his tack to California, he's on the East Coast a lot again. Joe and Princess Grace for Mike Stidham. And this is John and Susan Moore, one of their homebreds, the Caracanti, out of the Silent Name Mare Mask Parade. It's kind of funny. They took two Japanese-bred dam and sire to produce a North American, a Kentucky-bred Princess Grace, a four-year-old filly, won that, you know, that Dr. Penny. And I didn't want that to slip through the cracks. All right, so we can slide that out of here. Before I talk about the Belmont Oaks, the Belmont Derby, Saturday, lots going on that front. Before I talk about that, and then I have no recollection as to what I was going to talk about instead. Okay. All right. Let's go. Let's go toward the Saturday action that we're looking forward to. And of course, the Del Cap card was already, you know, been drawn for a few days. So I don't know if you've had a chance to look ahead to Delaware's action on Saturday, but the Robert Dick, the Grade 3, and of course the Grade 2 Del Cap, they're going to be part of the cross country. There's also the Dashing Beauty and the Battery Park that I mentioned actually with Bill on Tuesday with Fat Man or with Chris Griffin, because Fat Man had been cross entered in that and in that allowance at Parks, but is running in this Battery Park. So four stake slate at Delaware. And then yesterday, Belmont put together the two grade ones, and the 7th, 8th, and 9th, the Oaks, the Victory Ride, and the Belmont Derby. And they came up really nice. Those three stakes will be bookended by Delaware with the Robert Dick and the Del Cap. So an all-stakes pick five this weekend, all graded stake, pick five. And it does feel like the Euros, and specifically Coolmore, is coming with with real ammunition. Santa Barbara in the Oaks, Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore coming to town. And then Bolshoi Ballet in the Derby. So O'Brien, Moore, Coolmore, feeling fairly imposing in the two grade ones, $700,000 Belmont Oaks and the $1 million Belmont Derby. The victory ride in between, and the fields are solid enough, 8 by 8 by 9. And actually, on that front, I put this up this morning on Twitter. The Robert Dick has got 9, and the Del Cap has got 7. So you got nice field size for the pick 5. But the victory ride is going to be fun, I think. You've got that Australasia for Brad Cox and Magnifico stable and undefeated, but this will be her toughest test to date. Cox has been very careful with Australasia. As I wouldn't say that, you know, he's been shielding her per se, but has been, you know, has been prudent about, you know, where and when to run this filly. So this is her first. This is her first major test. And I'm sure, speaking of tests, that's the obviously the ultimate goal. You want to get to the tests stakes up at Saratoga. By the way, it had to be a pretty wet morning. Again, I mean, it rained all night again here. I mean, it's been somewhat relentless. So let's get it all out of the way so we can get a nice start next week to the Saratoga season. Anyway, victory ride, Australasia, 6 for 6. And the Louisiana bred, it won the Jersey Girl, going 6. And she has won at 6.5 as well. So, and actually, you go back to the, you know, the two winter races at Delta and at Fairgrounds, you know, she's gone a route of ground. I mean, she went a mile at Delta and a mile 70 at Fairgrounds. But this feels like her wheelhouse, 6.5, 7. So coming out of the Jersey Girl, and she faces several coming out of there. But she also faces that Red Ghost for Wesley, the Scarborough Ghost Zapper filly that won the Miss Preakness. Super Sensational. Got a little bit of a freshening out of the 8 Bells, Mrs. Weber, and Mark Cassie. This is a nice cast. You got Inject coming in for Brad Cox as well. This is a frosted filly you might not have noticed won the Goldfinch. Yeah, I mean, this is a very nice group. You've got 2 for 2, Overcharged, a Star Guitar. Boy, the Louisiana breds are prominent. This is a Brit Lynn product. Cross-entered at Monmouth as well. So we'll see what Camejo does with Overcharged. But, you know, that allowance win at Monmouth, 91 buyer, that puts her absolutely, you know, in with a chance. This is a very accomplished, polished group of 3-year-old fillies for the victory ride. Should be fun. Should be, you know, I think everybody is still kind of in post, you know, post Triple Crown mode, and kind of still treading water, leading toward Del Mar and Saratoga, but some good racing this weekend. Looking forward to it. And by the way, in addition to the pick 5, I tweeted this too, and I'm going to give you this because tomorrow is the deadline. There's the Belmont Challenge, the Belmont Derby Challenge this time around, $3,000 entry fee, online only. There's a pair of NHC seats that are up for grabs, as well as a $10,000 2022 Belmont Stakes entry. So should be nice. And challenge at NairaInc.com. Registration closes. Oh, these always invariably close on Fridays. Friday, 5 o'clock. All right. So challenge at NairaInc.com if you want in. And we'll do a reminder tomorrow, too. I'll save that over there. Anyway, those are the principles. And looking forward to talking to Nick tomorrow. And I speaking of NHC, I saw where Nick tweeted yesterday about one which wasn't about the tie about Lotus of Siam. It was the famous the famous dim sum joint. Anyway, everybody's I think putting their reservations together for NHC week in Vegas. That it's as much about that as it is obviously the championship itself is the, you know, number one, but those group dinners around town, they're a big part of the enjoyment and the festivities. Casey, let's head to a break, and we'll come back. We'll get started, and we'll get Dick in here. We've got Tony Black later, and Tony at this late stage of his career. I sent him that. The DRF with a PEB with him on the cover. And this was in that streak of his when he, you know, had a 2-day 10 race win streak that put him in, you know, a rare company. I mean, those kinds of totals of, you know, there's only a handful of those that have ever happened in racing, but there was also a record that he set at Atlantic City, and he got it yesterday. I mailed it, and he said he didn't even realize that he had set a record at Atlantic City. They had never, you know, nobody ever made a big deal of it. He wasn't even aware. It's kind of funny. So we'll talk to Tony. We've got Clancy conversation at second half this morning as well, and we've got to catch up with Rich Eng, and Rich probably getting a freshening toward the Del Mar season as well. So we've got a handful. Let's do this. Take a break. We'll come right back, and Dick Powell start us off. We'll talk a little international action, and of course the best international action yesterday was England's win over Denmark, and I'm going to guess we've got more listeners from that were England fans than we do Danes. I'm just guessing. But I certainly would love to see them. I would love to see England win this thing on Sunday. But it's set up in England, Italy should be a lot of fun for the Euro. All right, let's take a break, come back. Dick Powell starts us off at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, 3-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
938-4643.
breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Dick on SiriusXM Radio.
When you touch my hand and talk sweet talk, I got a knocking in my knees and a wobble in my walk. I'm trembling and I'm shaking. And when you take me in your arms to talk romance, my heart stops dough and the Saint Vitus dance. And I'm panting and I'm shaking.
Little Willie John.
In the morning time.
Love it.
Late in the middle of the night. Whenever this chill comes over me, I wanna hug it with all of my might. And I'm sweating.
We're back, and as we come back, one thing I wanted to slip in, I'm going through the stacks of wax on this desk, and Country Life Farm, and of course, I mentioned Mosler earlier, and Voltarine. In fact, she's still down there with the Motown baby, but congratulations to Josh Pons and staff. Divining Rod got his first winner. Came in Illinois, actually, and Carnival Conquest, nice performance on Tuesday, came at Fairmont. So, Divining Rod, and this, of course, a lot of upside. We talked with Josh, around Preakness time, and there's every reason to believe that that he's going to be a hit, and he's just, you see a picture of him. Oof. I mean, he is an absolute standout physically. So, Divining Rod, and gets his first winner. Yeah, his dam is a half to Kitten's Joy. Yeah, there's a lot going on in Divining Rod's page. So, keep an eye. Let's turn and bring Dick Powell in. Dick, good morning.
Steve, nobody picks six. I haven't heard that mentioned in the.
That's true. A couple of people. A couple of people have. Yeah.
Okay.
Not
good.
Not publicly.
That was always a big thing.
Yeah. It's his. It was one of his. One of Harvey's great taglines, nobody picked six today.
If you're rooting for a long shot in the last race when you're watching the show, you can have Harvey do that. I'd even bring my kids over, and neither one of them had any interest in horse racing. I'd say, come here, watch this. And they'd say, yeah, all right. But it was funny for me, and like everything with Harvey, it was memorable.
What was your background and your association? I mean, I'm sure you rubbed elbows no shortage of times, and you're really obviously younger than Harvey, but in a lot of ways, your association with the game overlapped a big portion of his.
It was very, very good. I did this thing, and this is not something you're supposed to do, but I saw Jerry McEwen, who was the president of NIRA, one night at some function, and I was writing for the Troy Record, not the most glamorous position. And I said to him, I said, there's something I'd like to talk to you about. And he said, well, stop by my office tomorrow. So I go down to his office, and I said to him, I said, well, for 48 weeks a year, we have the same people on the replay show. But then when you come up here for 4 weeks, you have the same people. I said, we have people up here that are every bit as good as the people you have on the other 48 weeks. Jerry looks at me and says, you're right. So next thing, they call me, and I got to go on Harvey's show, Thoroughbred Action. It was on sales week. So it's Saratoga, it's sales week. I mean, there's a lot of people watching. And I did that. There was even though I kind of pushed my way in, Harvey was great. He was very complimentary and all that. And then I wasn't a regular in his office, but, right by the shoe board in the paddock, and I would stop in there and have lots of conversations with him. And then from out of nowhere, Andy Beyer decided he didn't want to go to Saratoga anymore. And he was going to spend his summers at Del Mar. Well, the Paddock Club for years was Steve Crist on Saturday and Andy on Sunday. So they put me on Sunday, which was, you can't imagine how many people were there because Sunday is a giveaway day.
That's
and
right.
The people that are coming for the giveaways are there early. They might not be there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but they're there at 12 o'clock. So the crowd was enormous. So I get thrown into that and enjoyed doing that. I did it on and off years later. And Harvey could not have been kinder, more gracious. I got to know some of his regulars, especially Louis Morrow, Louis the Clocker. He and I were very good friends. We would scout horses in the paddock. We would go down and look at two-year-olds and look at fitness, see if they needed a race or whether they were fit first time out, just stuff like that. We loved doing that stuff. And Harvey just could not have been nicer. I'll tell you a funny story. He was not hesitant to be critical of Naira. I mean, if something went bad, he wasn't going to hide from it. So he said something one night on the show, and it was no big deal, but naturally they got upset. So Harvey gets called into Alan Dragone's office. Alan was the chairman. And Harvey says, "Boss, I'm a company man. You know I'm a company man, but I can't let them know I'm a company man." It was just like the perfect answer for someone who got themselves into that position. And Alan was like, yeah, you're right. You're okay. And then that was me. That was the end of that. But it was just Harvey using his wit and cleverness to get himself out of a jam. And I'm sure, knowing Harvey later, I'm sure his career had been many jams because Harvey did not suffer fools very well and had a acerbic wit to him. And, He was, you couldn't even invent Harvey today, and the closest is Andy. That you couldn't have Andy without Harvey, and now it's I like a lot of the people that do racing. I think it's different. It's obviously more diverse and everything else, but it's just not the same. Now, if we went to some other city or whatever, I don't know how well it all played outside of New York. Like when you're a New Yorker, you tend to be narcissistic and everything revolves around New York. So if it's big in New York, it's big everywhere. Well, maybe not. But Harvey was certainly big in Florida, where everyone knew him and watched him and people who followed Naira. Harvey was big. And then he did great on the ESPN, the NBC with Pete Eckstone for the Breeders' Cup. And he was terrific. And, you know, typical network executives that didn't last more than a couple of years, but he could not have been nicer to me, could not have helped me more than he did, and just I genuinely enjoyed him. I always didn't see him that often. He wound up speaking. Ben Liebman has had him as the keynote speaker at the Albany Law Conference 10, 15 years ago, and he got up and he told the same three jokes. And it was funny because it was a bunch of attorneys sitting around. It wasn't his normal audience, and it didn't faze him a bit. He just got up, told the same three jokes. That was it.
The NBC gig, and the story, it might be apocryphal, I guess, at this point, but I remember hearing, and I don't remember it live, but the story always went that, and I can't remember if it was him and Axe or who, because as Andy Serling pointed out yesterday, Axe only did a couple of the segments over that whatever it was 6-7 year period with Harvey, but the line about being asked who he liked, you know, who he was betting in this, and he said, "I'm going to Texas, El Paso," and, yep. Right?
Yes.
And that did not, apparently that was a, that was something that didn't sit well, I guess, at 30 Rock.
No, and then I recently read someone did a big long piece on Pete Eckstone. And very, very detailed, but very personal. And his alcoholism just was worse and worse and worse. And it was affecting his work. So I don't know if at that point it had gotten to the point where it affected his, you know, he could still go on the air and be Pete Eckstone, but with all the behind-the-scenes stuff and everything. So I had read that recently, and I didn't realize it was that bad. And also, you're really shocked to read how young he was when he passed.
Yeah,
and Harvey makes it to 94. But I tell you the difference. Joy Pack having a significant other. As far as longevity, having someone there and just making sure you go to the doctors and don't go to OTD. Yeah, just all the things that you're supposed to do. And she's wonderful. And just she was like a perfect match for him. So it was sad, but when you hear 94, and wow, that's just awesome that he had the life he had, and his stature only grew.
Agreed. And I mean, for somebody who had been out of the, you know, out of the public eye for a good 15 years, his notoriety, and especially at certain times of the year, right around Saratoga, and when we would, in fact, I've got Casey and I were digging through our resources, and we have got two pieces from 18 that we're probably edit, and it just so happened that we ended up having back-to-back conversations with Harvey around Belmont, and then when Manny Yakeza passed, and Harvey came on, and that was close enough to the beginning of Saratoga that we had our Saratoga conversation as well. So we've got two from 2018, and then there's others that are a little older that, you know, we got to dig around. But I tried to have kind of a comprehensive conversation with him way back when we were doing some Tuesday Dark Day features, and the two of them, with Tommy Kelly being, you know, particularly, you know, well received and notable, but I tried to do one with Harvey that way too when he was still coming up, and because it got tough for him to get around. I mean, that, you know, mentally he was sharp as a tack, and but his wheels started to go, and it got a little tough for him to get around. So they stopped coming to Saratoga. And one of the things that was funny, Dick, was how for years he would make fun, and he himself discussed this. He would make fun of people going to casinos, and then in retirement, in full fledged retirement, he started to really enjoy going to Atlantic City, and would go down. They would go down regularly, and he loved it. He was a convert on that topic.
Yep. one of the things when he did the WNBC race recreations, he would get the chart somehow electronically. I don't know how many minutes after the race, 15, 20 minutes after the race, and then come on and recreate the race as dramatic and flair and everything else as he could. Well, there was a horse named Jacques Hou. And Jacques Hou was a gray New York bred who always ran second. I think he ran second 12 times. And finally, Jacques Hou breaks his maiden and wins the race. And Harvey had trumpets blaring. He had applause. He had all the background audio to make it, to embellish the fact that Jacques Hou finally won a race. I mean, it was just great. And it was something you listened to. You wanted to hear it. And WNBC obviously was a huge, huge AM radio station with a terrific signal. I lived in Staten Island then. But it was just terrific to listen to. And then he's with Nyron, had a nice career at Nyron. Not quite sure why it ended, but a lot of people's careers ended when a certain guy became chairman and president, which, believe it or not, is against the law. They had to backdate a law change in order to allow that to happen. But that's a subject for a different day, Stevie.
Well, the late Kenny No is the individual in question here, and and Harvey was very, very clear about the frustration and annoyance at the way in which, and Andy yesterday too. Andy Serling also said it was just poorly handled, and Andy was a victim of that too himself, of that era's purge.
Well, yep. Well, I was working there, and in 1994 in August, I'm standing outside where the executive office used to be on that black top path coming into the track, and talking to Vic Gilardi. And Vic's looking, I'm looking at Vic, Vic's looking at me, but then behind me, he sees someone, and he starts cursing this. I'm like, who are you talking about? And he wouldn't even give the guy's name, him. And it was Kenny No, and Kenny No had showed up unbeknownst to anybody that day. And apparently he was horrified to see people at picnic tables and, all the usual stuff. And then next thing, the end of the meet, Jerry McCune was out, and I was a consultant working for Jerry McCune and Alan Dragone. So now Jerry's out, Jerry Lawrence was out, all these people, Alan Gutterman was let go in November. And I'm like, oh, when is the next shoe going to? Because all my rabbis are gone. I only have one rabbi left. And it was Alan, and Alan was still chairman, which is a big position. Well, then Kenny comes in and says, no, I'll only be president unless I'm chairman. Well, anyone running a major corporation knows the folly of allowing your president to be chairman. But the same people on the board of directors who all ran big major corporations said, okay, and they let Kenny have the whole show, and then he had no checks and balances. And believe me, Kenny was not all bad. Kenny did a lot of good things. But people skills, someone asked me, what is he like? I said, he is a combination George the Animal Steel and Floyd the Barber from the Andy Griffith Show.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. Well done, Dick. That
it's perfect.
That really is. The unusual thing is, when you say there was a certain group that the horsemen appreciated Kenny No from everything I've ever heard.
Well, he took care of the backstretch. You would never have, manure piling up or, all that stuff got taken care of when he was there. I mean, yes, he brought in Howard Battle, and Howard was a great guy and a great race secretary, but he came in with this condition book that went over like a lead balloon. And the racing was just non-competitive. You had almost 40% favorites winning the year Howard was race secretary. And it was the way the races were written, and he wanted everything to go by the book, which is, theoretically, that sounds like a good idea, not have all the extras that, over time it's become more of an extras, a condition book. But when Howard came in, that didn't go over real well. And I remember Phil Johnson got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he made a very funny comment. It wasn't mean or nasty, because Phil was never that way, but he just made a funny comment about the new race secretary. So yes, the horsemen did support him, but he did understand the backside way more than the front side.
No, well put. That's a good framing, actually. Well, Harvey, and we'll tomorrow Dave Greinig will be with us. We'll get Dave's thoughts. I mean, there's almost certainly anybody of I would guess anybody, what, I guess 45 and younger, 40 to 45 and younger, you know, if you took an interest in the game over the past literally 50 years, you were influenced, and even people younger, let's say, than 50, may not even realize how influenced their interest in the game is because of Harvey.
Yeah, no doubt, and he made it fun to be a horse player. He made it okay to be a horse player. We had a guy up here on WGY, Harry Downey. And Harry had a tremendous radio show mid-morning, very popular, but Harry loved racing. And he would have, like, Lenny Hale on during the off-season to talk about racing and stuff. And Harry Downey made it okay to be a racing fan. Like, if you're working in an office, you might have a Saratoga cup, a coffee cup, something like that. And people like that are just critical for success because they just make the tent wider and bigger and make it so much better for the people underneath.
Harvey Pack. Dick, last week before we get into Saratoga, when we're together next week, we'll have... Well, together next week will be opening day. So we'll have had, probably have had 3 days worth of, we'll have Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the first three race cards together to look at and get a snapshot of the first 10% of the meet, essentially, the first 4 days. Some pre Saratoga thoughts.
I heard you talking about the weather before, which is actually a big positive to get the turf courses as lush and, you know, deep as possible, because obviously they're going to be used pretty good. Now, hopefully the pattern will change and we'll go back to, sunny, dry weather. But last night's storm, wow, I was right on top of us. I mean, that thunder was... The lightning and thunder were hitting at the same time, and it poured and it's supposed to keep raining most of today, whatever. So that part will be good because obviously there's going to be a lot of turf racing at the meet. I don't go in with a lot of, a lot of preconceived notions or anything because it changes so many times what might have worked, or a trainer might have been hot or something like that doesn't always carry through. So I just kind of keep it loose and see what's happening. And the big thing for me that works every year, favorites win far less on the inner turf course than they do on the mellow turf course. That's without doubt every season. So if you're playing a multi-leg race, you might spread more on the inner turf race, and you might narrow more on the mellow turf race because the mellow turf is kinder to closes. You have a little bit more time to get up. It's not turns aren't as sharp, things like that. It'll be interesting for the riders this year, and I fully agree with Andy with the. The stranglehold tactics that many of them employ. So that's always a level of frustration because when you're going from 7 furlong and mile one turn races and now those same horses are now going 3 turns, it's a totally different pace dynamic and really hard to, take that form and apply it to this form, especially with depending on the pace. So that's something that's always looking at. Frustrating to watch jockeys that if you find that a jock that is aggressive, and I think Louis Saez will be because he usually is, and Kieran McLaughlin's getting him on good mounts. So I'll be looking at Louis on a lot of races. If he has something live, I'll be looking at him because I know Louis's not going to use those tactics. And despite driving you crazy with the patience, Joel is just day in and day out. Troell's just fantastic. So I love following him and seeing where Ron Anderson has put him and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to it, but not necessarily doing a whole lot of prep work other than try to follow Belmont as well as I can and just get ready.
Looking forward and getting excited, and as I've been telling people for weeks, the town itself is clearly on edge, and feels like a powder keg for the season, and all the the advance reservations and so forth. So I'm always sort of a deer in the headlights when it comes to to these next few days. It's like you have to adjust your schedule, you have to adjust your sleep pattern and everything else, and even the advent of the 5-day, and I just remember Jay Pribman, in the lead up to the switch from 6 to 5 days, Jay kept saying you're going to be so receptive, and you won't believe the difference and that it makes, and it has. I mean, having that extra day, as opposed to literally, your foot on the floor for 7 weeks, it just the pace, Dick. I don't know how you think back. You don't know how you did it, really. When it came to, not only, I always say this, not only, was the 5 days now, 6 days then, but you also ratchet up the field size for sections of cards every single day. I mean, races that were drawing, six horses, seven horses downstate will now draw 8, 9, 10, and races that were drawing 8, 9 will draw 12. And so it becomes, a bigger challenge. Then you start folding in your 2-year-old scene and, full fields of 2-year-olds that, going to have a lot of first-time starters. You're going to have surface switches and horses moving to turf. So you got all the pedigree work that gets increased exponentially. You better eat your Wheaties, as as they say.
Well, and I was one of the big advocates to expand the meet past 4 weeks. When I was writing for the Record, I would write these hard-hitting opinion pieces on they have to stop running 4 weeks. It doesn't work. You got to expand the meet. And most of the media was just the total opposite. No, you're going to kill the Golden Goose. And Alan Dragone hired me because I was way out extreme on that issue. And, we just had some conversations that went well. But I was always in favor of expanding the meet. So now the fact that we're still talking about this, and it's 8 weeks. So it's unbelievable to think back when it was 4 weeks, and you would draw the races the day before, and the overnight would come. The overnight would come out around the fifth race, sixth race, when you're at the track, and then you had exclusions. You might have back then they were running 12, so you might have 12, 4 AEs. 17 excluded that never got in, but they get a star for preference the next time they enter and stuff like that. I mean, that was intense. And even at 8 weeks, the intensity is still there. Now, beyond 8, no, I'm not advocating beyond 8. But 8 weeks works very, very well. And it's been the salvation of Naira, because this is their bread and butter up here.
No doubt, and I don't want to put a time stamp on you, but you've got to be just old enough, I would think, Dick, to remember the period where there was real uncertainty about racing, right?
Yes, there was even talk of running Belmont during Saratoga,
right?
That it was, because what we don't remember we don't remember how Saratoga might have 10,000-12,000 during the week and maybe 18,000-19,000 on a weekend. There was no Sunday racing. People forget that. But what we forget is how big Belmont and Aqueduct were. That Belmont and Aqueduct was averaging 28,000 people per day. So you're going from this boom, and now you're coming up here, and other than, you know, get a little vacation and nice area to go visit, business-wise, it was a big loss to give up 4 weeks downstate at those numbers. So there was a couple of laws passed. I can't remember the local mayor. I should know it. He was instrumental in getting some legislation passed to make sure Saratoga took place and some things like that. And then obviously Mary Lou Whitney. I mean, Mary Lou Whitney got involved, and Saratoga downtown looked nothing like it does today, or even like it looked 30 years ago. Saratoga downtown in the 60s, you know, you might have been in downtown Troy or downtown Albany. Boarded up storefronts, it just wasn't thriving. And Mary Lou came to town, and she took it upon herself and just worked, and made Saratoga what it is today. So, yeah, it wasn't that far back, and, yeah, pretty wild.
Well, and, you know, with it, not that the racetrack alone is responsible for the town's ongoing growth. When I say growth, I suppose that means, you know, real estate value. But it is directly tied, obviously. I mean, and I've told this story too over the years, being up in the carousel and sort of befriending or getting to know some people who, over several days, were at a table close to where I was, you know, where I would position myself, and it started to get friendly with them. Actually, in a funny way, because I overheard one of the wives say, "Oh, have you tried the frozen custard? It's really good this year." And saying to one of her friends, and I turned to them and I said, "You must be from Rochester." And they said, "How do you know that?" I said, "Oh, you've got a distinct Rochester accent." And you know, they're like, "What do you mean? What's a Rochester accent?" And I didn't tell them for a while, because nobody, unless you're from Wisconsin, nobody calls soft serve ice cream frozen custard except people from Rochester, because of Abbott's. And so that's how I knew. So I started to talk to them, and the husbands were retired Xerox or Kodak people, and they said, "Oh, we've retired here." I said, "Excuse me? This is in the 90s, Dick, because I was living in Montreal." And I said, "What do you mean you're retired here?" "Oh, we sold our house in Rochester, and we... You're here year-round?" "Oh, pretty much. I mean, we go down to Florida and so forth, but, you know, no, we're here year-round." And that was my first sort of eye-opener that something was happening in Saratoga, because anybody that came here in the 70s and 80s, this town was dog-eared and threadbare, and nobody should kid themselves about how beautiful and fairyland-like it was, because it wasn't. And the racetrack elevated, you know, with its increased importance, it took the town with it, and that's why over the years, when I've particularly been critical of the Times Union in particular, the lack of appreciation for what the racing has done for the region, it to me is always stunning when there's attack pieces and smears and one-sided versions of things. The Saratogians guilty of this too, which is inexplicable. That's why it's always, I've always, you know, acted, you know, pretty acutely in those settings.
Yeah, I mean, I moved there in 84, and it's very different. I some of the development with the condos downtown, and I don't like that. There's certain things they've done, allowing buildings to be like built right up onto the sidewalk. Some of these four-story high-rises and no green space, no nothing. And I'm not thrilled with that. But when I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, when it looked like casino gambling was going to pass the statewide referendum, which it did, and then this area was eligible to get a casino, and I fought a casino in Saratoga. And I was dead set against it. I did a lot of writing. I did a lot of political work behind it and was one of the people that raised a lot of the issue. Well, my point is Saratoga Racetrack is the economic engine of this area. Yes. We cannot afford to have even a 5 or 10% drop. You can't play with that. And the people at the harness rack, they were not happy with me. You know, they still... So it cost some of those people money, things like that. But my speculation was, based on years of experience, was if Saratoga Hornets would have become a full-fledged casino, what would the first thing to happen? They're going to sell. It's going to be Caesars. It's going to be Harrah's. It's not going to be locally owned, maybe work in cooperation with the racetrack or whatever. They're going to come in and they're going to do business as they want to do business for themselves. So I was dead set against it. And but it just shows you that, yes, there are other things in the area that are great, but it all depends on the racing. These people that retired are there because of the racing. The condo people are there because not just the racing, but all the people racing brings to town, all the great world-class food we have that they can walk to each night and things like that. So, but it all goes back to thoroughbred racing at the track, and you can't screw with that. You can't. That's why I'm way overprotective on things that affect it. And you know, when I see a guy like Chris Kay come in, I shudder. I mean, I think he was categorizing with a name, but I mean, he was dreadful as far as his performance. Red Jacket Hall of Fame and stuff like that. And just one stupid thing after another. You talk to people where I sit, you talk to people around, there's so many things that he did that were just nonsensical and stuff like that, and condescending to customers, and just awful. So I'm like, no, we can't afford to screw this up, and it can be screwed up. You know, don't ever think that it can't go the other way.
The one thing I will say, in Kay's defense, and I said that, would say this regularly while he was in position, he was hired to do one thing in particular, and that was extricate the association from the essential clutches at the time of the state, and he did that. And in fact, the importance of that role, and you know that the background that he had in terms of quasi government public entities, that obviously the message was very clear, because when you think about Jeff Canizzo's role, I mean that they've made a full time role. It isn't just part of the job of the president of the association. There's actually now somebody doing that full time, and it's Jeff Canizzo. But that's why I was always deferential to Chris Kay, because the way he was able to deal with Albany was important, and it made a very big difference. So in terms of appreciation for what he did do successfully, that's got to be said.
And you said it.
and obviously I can't get a concurrence. That's all right. The one thing we can agree on is the facility continues to evolve, and it's amazing that with a set amount of a geographic the size, the parameters of the property, there's been an ongoing enhancement regularly. And everybody's always on edge about everything. I mean, the insane carrying on that, oh, they're not going to let anybody in the backyard. Oh, they're not going to let anybody bring food. Oh, they're not going to let. It's just unbelievable. And you know, when they experimented with the paddock, the picnic table special reserved, which was, not a bad idea at all. There are people that can't assemble at 6 a.m., 5:30 in the morning, line up on Broadway, on Union Avenue to get in and run to a table. There's an ongoing effort to provide more and more options for people to come and enjoy and become regulars. I mean, the people that love it are always going to continue to come, but there's people and modern amenities that the facility absolutely had to develop, and they've been successfully developed.
No problem with that.
Dick, you're making me laugh. Gotta take some time, and before Tony Black joins us, let's talk Hancock.
Okay, we're getting to the last roundup here. Yesterday we ran at Happy Valley, the 86th meeting. We have a meeting Sunday at 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time at Shot 10. And then the 2021 season wraps up next Wednesday morning at Happy Valley. So we're just about done. Zach Purton is suspended for the last two meetings, so the jockey race is over. Joe was going to win anyway. Right now he leads 152 to 125. The trainer race, Casper Founds pulled ahead. He's 78 to John Sizer's 70, but John has so many horses the last 2 days. It's not impossible. It's unlikely, but it's not impossible that John could come back. But Casper's had a huge meet, and he's also the leading money-winning trainer, which you don't think of Casper, because Casper, half his wins usually come in Happy Valley. Jerry Chow has had a tremendous apprentice season. We've talked about him throughout the season. And if he would just stay out of the penalty box, he gets a lot of suspension. The stewards, make sure that he's doing everything right. But the kid has enormous talent. There was some interesting comments from Doug White. Doug White's the leading rider in Hong Kong history and now a trainer. Jerry's riding for him a lot. And Chow's very complimentary, very helpful with them. So you'll see Jerry Chow move up into riding standings next year, and maybe even start threatening the top two. Couple of horses that have emerged recently, Steve. California Spangle won his first start in a Griffin race, 5 furlongs and 55 and change. I mean, the fastest Griffin race ever at 5 furlongs. He came back in another Griffin race, which meant he picked up 7 pounds, and he ran 108.47. It's just spectacular. Looked good doing it. He's going to be enormous next year for Tony Cruz. They're going to geld him over to summer, so he'll come back as a gelding, so he'll be around for quite a while. And he just has just enormous talent. Still green, still has lots to learn. But watch the name California Spangle. And then last Sunday, I shot in a horse named Mr. Snowden. Went 7 and 120.57 and did it from post 14. Horse was good in Europe, now over here. And just spectacular final time, one of the fastest of the whole meet. Sunday, we're at Shot 10 for the final time. We're going to go to race 5, which is a... I doggy at the page and one I buy it, which is a 1,200-meter Class 4. There's a bunch of second-time starters in here that look really good, but I'm going to go with Flying Dragon, number 6, for Dennis Yip and Neil Callan. Neil Callan's leaving Hong Kong. He's going back to Ireland, but he's been finishing up very strongly. In fact, he rides a California Spangle. This horse was way, way back in a 1,000-meter straightaway. Got up to be second, big horse, over 1,200 pounds. Now he stretches out to 1,200 meters, draws post 7, which should be perfect for him. I think he'll improve greatly second time out. That's Flying Dragon, number 6, and race 5, and then race 8. There are no stake races Saturday night, but there's a couple of big $3 million Hong Kong handicaps. This is the Sha Tin Mile Trophy Handicap, race number 8, 90 up to 115. So these are stakes quality horses. Number 2, Rattan, is bending against just tough horses. Bannon Smash was a Japanese horse who won in December. Wellington Courier won this. Skyfield, one of the better four-year-olds. So Rattan gets a class drop. A lot of more less rated horses in this field. The only one higher rated is the one Champion's Wife. So I think number 2, Rattan, can finish out his season on a winning note, and coincidentally, he gets Red Hot Apprentice Jerry Chow, so he gets 5 pounds off. He's only going to carry 124 pounds. So race 8, number 2, Rattan. And that's a look at the last Sha Tin meet. Next week, we can talk about the last Happy Valley, wrap up the season.
Very nice. It's been a good year. It's been a fun season. It's amazing. As long as it is, you know, it's in what, 8.5 months. It kind of goes by fast. It comes back quick, but then you look up and you know when I think it's probably because during the Triple Crown, you know, you're so distracted, and then all of a sudden we wrap up and we start looking toward Saratoga and Del Mar, and then, you know, their season's ending. So it's been good. So we'll wrap it all up next year.
It's ending at the right time for me.
That's right. Absolutely. It puts us right on the doorstep of Saratoga and Del Mar. Dick, I appreciate it, and all the other topics as always, and we'll start to look toward the spa and the turf and where the action out west too. And we haven't done the last couple of years, I haven't mentioned it really yet, but Presque Isle underway, and the Presque Isle season, you start to take note of the results from Erie as well. Dick Powell, thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Talk to you next week.
You got it. Dick Powell, everybody. And we'll I'll hopefully get a couple of in-person visits with Dick too. We'll take a break here, Case. Let's break here. We got Tony Black is going to join us, I don't know how much Tony can impart on the situation involving Richie Vega, but Richie, when there was that sweep, quote unquote, in May at the track, they discovered syringes and unidentified, quote unquote, vials, etc., in the barn, and you know it was made into a mammoth cause celeb, and then upon actual inspection of what was rounded up in the various, you know, the various barns, last week the Racing Commission came back and said, well, actually there really was nothing of major illegal substance. And the one individual seemingly that's come out of this that has got a ramification is Richie Vega. And the Pennsylvania Board of Stewards last week, now probably 10 days, handed him a 2-year suspension. And there's very little specifics involved other than you know what was found at the barn, and they're calling them illegal substances. Well, is that other specifics? So Vega appealing, and maybe more will come out. Alan Pincus handling the legalities for Vega. And of course, Tony, you know, Tony gets on horses for Richie. And so I don't know how much more he can add. But it was notable that at the time when word came of the, when word came out of the raid, quote unquote, there was all the outrage and all of the, you know, all of the associated reactions to it. And then last week, I was on vacation, but then last week, the specifics, you know, come back and said, well, actually, there really wasn't anything that was found that, you know, it was termed, Tom Tchoukas termed it very, very minor. And of course, there wasn't nearly the reaction or you know, associated publicity with that. I mean, which, you know, seemingly amounted to a fairly widespread you know, clearing of everybody else except apparently Richie Vega. So we'll see where this goes. And on a similar topic, before we take the break, I will mention something that, and I thought about reaching for Alan Foreman, but I don't know if it is all that necessary to get Alan's input right now. But there was what really amounted to a gossip column blind item thrown out on Twitter on Monday. Kind of one of these, you know, questions without any specific or answers involving Claudio Gonzalez scratching his horses from Sunday's card at Pimlico. And of course, you know, a lot of people were playing the card for the force out of the Rainbow Six. And there actually is a very clear answer about the why he did that. And it has to do with the switch in testing laboratories that Maryland is using, and a number of Dex positives that have resulted. And it affects a whole bunch of trainers and beside Gonzalez. And so out of caution, and it isn't anything particularly nefarious either. It's a 24, or I should say 48-hour versus 72-hour withdrawal period. And, you know, the Maryland Commission and you know, those that handle this kind of thing, they aren't sure how, you know, what level of testing was going on at the previous lab versus the new lab. So with some Dex positives being called, anybody that, you know, that was operating at a certain parameter, like 48 hours out, where they need to be probably at 72 hours out, they are, you know, scratching horses so that they don't, you know, that if there's been this, you know, this either sensitivity level or whatever, they're doing it out of an abundance of caution. So it really was nothing that a phone call or two probably couldn't have answered. But instead, it seems like there's this desire to just create a haze of paranoia and negativity about anything and everything. It's to me, it's just exasperating. Because it's like, you know, let's speculate and let's dangle a scenario of illegal activity when it more or less is just a matter of fine-tuned barn management and you know, the way in which the testing and so forth is conducted. Instead, it seems like the desire is to create a series of you know, tweet storms to, you know, cast aspersions and smear, you know, people, you know, based on speculation. What's the benefit of this? I just don't get it. 90 minutes in. Let's take a break. Tony Black going to join us, and Joe Clancy as well in the second half. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half on this Thursday, and Tony Black going to join us. And I had some fun with Tony while on vacation, and it was very organic because as I was cleaning up and getting rid of all, just trying to purge certain things. And when I got to the DRFs, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't, give him the heave-ho. All the terrific, specific big day DRFs that I had, and then there were some that were just random. I mean, for a while, I used to keep every single, until I started printing the PPs off the computer. I used to keep every single Saratoga DRF. There were boxes. In fact, in the summer kitchen, which is sort of an addition to the backside of the house. There's a closet in, and it's nothing ornate. It's literally just a box that was tagged onto the house, probably in the 20s or the teens, and the house was built in 1848. There's a little closet, and I think there's all the DRFs from when I moved here, probably, because I can't believe that I would have brought them down from Canada, I from Montreal. So I'm going to guess from about 99. Yeah, probably about 99. I'm going to